Genesis chapter 49. I believe we're on track to finish the book of Genesis in the month of August. I think we have two Wednesdays left. I thought at first we might finish tonight, but then, you know, I don't think we'll finish tonight. How many of you have headings, chapter headings, in your Bible? What you got for Genesis 49? Jacob blesses his sons is pretty common. That's what mine is. That's what I heard several say. Jacob blesses his sons. Now, you've all read chapter 49. Do all of these seem like blessings? In fact, the only one that's referred to as a blessing is for Joseph. Now, we can look at some of the others, and we will, and we'll recognize that there are blessings involved in those. But the real blessing was for Joseph. Verses 1 and 2. Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you what shall happen to you in days to come. Assemble and listen, O sons of Jacob. Listen to Israel your father." Did Jacob see these things as blessings for his children?
I see them mostly as prophecies for was the future for each tribe, what they're going to experience. That's how I view it.
Okay, and that's what I believe Jacob is expressing here. This is what's going to happen to you in the days to come. This is what's going to happen, not just to you, Reuben, not just to you, Simeon and Levi and the rest of you, but to your people, your tribe. This is what's going to happen. This is how your people are going to be. What if someone came to you, called you to stand in front of them and said, "This is your life. This is your future. This is what your days will be like. This is what's going to happen to you in the time to come. This is what your children are going to be like. They're going to be a nation. They're going to be a group of people, and this is how they're going to interact with other people." Would you appreciate that message? We have a no.
A no, because based on human nature, people don't want to hear things like that, even though it might be for their own good. But people will resist something like that.
Okay, if it's negative, I think there would be kind of a desire to not hear it. But if it's something positive, I think we would feel like we're encouraged by that. Some people, I think, said yes, that they would appreciate that sort of foresight, that sort of telling into their future. And I think, by and large, most people would like that. Now, if it is this bad thing's going to happen to you, your children are going to rebel and be an evil people, we might try to do everything we can to go against that, to fix it. But remember, and we'll see as we dig into some of these blessings, these are not things that Jacob came up with on his own to pass along to his children. This is from God. And so when Jacob tells his sons, or a son, "You're going to have strife. Your descendants are going to be warriors." whatever that child tried to do to counteract that prediction was going to fail, because we cannot outwit God. We can't outsmart God. We cannot go around God's plan. If God says it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And we'll see that in every one of these things that Jacob told his sons, it happened. Every one of them, it happened. Now, Jacob had children by four different women. Who were they? Just call them out. Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah. And these are somewhat grouped together in chapter 49. We start in verses 3 through 15 with the sons of Leah. Jacob had six sons by Leah. And Leah, remember, was a wife that he didn't want. She wasn't even on his radar until he married her. He wanted Rachel. And he got Rachel too, but Leah was the wife he didn't want. And the firstborn was Reuben. Verse 3, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the firstfruits of my strength. Preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Think about what we know about Reuben. Does that sound like him? It does. And that sounds very positive, right? Those are high marks for the firstborn. But Jacob wasn't finished. Because all of these things, all of these good things can be twisted for evil. And Reuben did that. Reuben had every opportunity. But he wasted those opportunities. Verse 4, unstable as water, you shall not have preeminence. Because you went up to your father's bed and you defiled it. He went up to my couch. This old sin that Reuben had committed caught up with him. And we probably have some experience with that in our own life. We do something that we know we shouldn't do, and seemingly we get away with it. But sometime down the road, 6 months, 6 years, 60 years down the road, it catches up to us. And we pay the price for a decision that we've made, for a bad choice that we've made. Reuben lost his privileges as the firstborn son. Reuben should have been a strong man with dignity, even after his father was gone. He should have taken over as the leader of that family. But he turned out really a weak man. What does that phrase, unstable as water, mean? Turbulent. Turbulent water. Think about still water. You got a tub of still water. What are you going to build on that water? A boat, Bud said. Okay, that's good. It's going to sink. What you put on top of that water generally is going to sink. It's not going to be stable. It's not a solid foundation. That's calm water, still water. What about turbulent water. Turbulent water.
Water that's rough all the time that causes a lot of trouble.
That's right. It causes a lot of trouble. It can be very dangerous, very destructive. Fortunately, I haven't lived through a hurricane. You have. Most of you, probably all of you. We know about, or you know, about turbulent water and the damage and the destruction that it causes. Reuben was a destructive force within the family. And he lost. Yes, this is called a blessing. But where is the blessing in this?
I was thinking about that water, you know, and we just got through, we just got back from Alaska, and mm-hmm. we saw a bunch of falling water up there. Water tends to go downhill to a lower level. And that, to me, was what they were talking about the turbulent waters. It spills down the spillway till it gets down to the lowest level. And in his life, he did spill down to the lowest level by defiling his daddy's bed. And so I think, anyway, that's what it meant to me.
Okay.
I was thinking about James when he talks about if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask. But ask in faith, because if you don't, then you're not stable. You're unstable in all your ways. And you're like a wave of the sea, tossed back and forth. So Reuben couldn't stay stable in his commitment to the office, for lack of a better word. He was firstborn. He knew where what he should have been. But he let sin take hold of him and destroy that steadfastness.
That's right. And really, where is the blessing in this first of the blessings? I'm going to remind you of what you could have been, what you should have been, Reuben. And then I'm going to tell you, you're the exact opposite. And, you know, someone pointing out error in your life, someone identifying ways to help you correct things in your life, that can be a blessing. It really is a blessing, right? If I'm living in sin and someone comes to me and says, James, you're living in sin, that's a blessing. I should view it as a blessing. As we examine the rest of scriptures, we can't really find someone from the line of Reuben who distinguished himself as a leader. It's just not there. And that's exactly what his daddy told him. You're no leader, and your people will not be leaders. Simeon and Levi, we remember the sin of Simeon and Levi. Let's read beginning in verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. Let my soul come not into their counsel. O my glory, be not joined to their company. For in their anger they killed men, and in their willfulness they hamstrung oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. How many blessings do you know that include the word cursed? Well, here's one, I guess, according to the heading in my Bible, these blessings of Jacob's sons. What did Simeon and Levi do?
They they slaughtered a whole city full of men. Was it Shadai?
The Shechemites. They slaughtered the Shechemites, and why did they do it?
Because of their sister, Diana.
Because of what, how they had Shechem had basically kidnapped Dinah and was holding her hostage and was trying to work out terms where she would be his wife. She was raped. And understandably, Simeon and Levi were angry at this happening to their sister. And so they sought justice. No, they weren't looking for justice. They were looking for revenge. They were looking for retribution. They weren't looking for that other R word that we ought to be searching for, and that is reconciliation. And I guess, you know, I'm ashamed to admit, and but I doubt I'm the only person in this room that there are times when that's what I look for. Instead of looking for reconciliation, I want revenge. I want them to hurt like they hurt me. Have you ever felt that way? So we've got something in common with Simeon and Levi. But we can look at them and say, what horrible people they were. But sometimes we're just like them. It was dangerous to be in their assembly. It was dangerous to be in their company because of their anger, because of their wrath. God arranged it so that those two tribes didn't assemble. Those two tribes didn't do anything together. The tribe of Simeon eventually was absorbed into Judah. And the tribe of Levi was given 48 towns to live in, scattered throughout the land. They were the priests. You know, they loved to shed blood. So it was the perfect job for them. But they were indeed divided and scattered in Israel. Judah, verse 8. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hands shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's cub. And from the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion and a lioness who dares rouse him. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until the tribute comes to him, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Binding his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine, he has washed his garments in wine and his vestures in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine and his teeth are whiter than milk. Jacob's estimation of Judah has clearly risen as his view of his three older sons has diminished. Okay.
When I was reading this, and I know that our Savior came through the line of Judah, and to me this is telling me that somebody very special is coming down that line. And Judah, even though he had his little moments of weakness and stuff, but he was still respected by his father. His father knew what was going to happen. He already sensed it from what he learned from his father and what his father learned from his father. So something big and beautiful is coming down the line of Judah, the lion of Judah.
That's right. Now, Judah did make mistakes. Most notably, we remember his mistake with Tamar. But Judah did something great in the eyes of Jacob. Anybody remember what that was? He offered himself as the guarantee for Benjamin. Now, Joseph had been Jacob's favorite. But with Joseph dead, at least as far as Jacob knew, Benjamin had clearly become the favorite. It's almost as if Jacob wouldn't let Benjamin out of his sight. And Judah offers his life in place of Benjamin's life. And that's a big deal. That would be a big deal in any family. It was certainly a big deal for Jacob. He made things right with his father. Yes, he made mistakes, but he worked to make those things right, to correct those mistakes. Judah was the beginning of the royal tribe. Now, the first king didn't come from the tribe of Judah. Who was the first king? Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin. Who was the second king? David from the tribe of Benjamin. No. From the tribe of Judah. That was the royal tribe. Levi was the priestly tribe. Judah would be the royal tribe, from which the King of Kings would come. And like Kathy said, that has to be what this is pointing toward. That has to be what Jacob is talking about. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until the tribute comes to him, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Now, starting in verse 11, we get some interesting language. Binding his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. We have horse people in here. Horse people? Anybody? No horse people. Okay. Well, I don't think you have to be a horse person to be able to answer this. How many of you, if you had a horse, would tie that horse to a vine? What would happen? You'd lose your horse. And you'd lose your vine. That's right. You'd lose it all. Sure, the horse might eat the vine, but we have any people, anybody know how to wash clothes? I noticed Dodie didn't raise his hand, Bill didn't raise his hand. So at least we have some honest men. How many of you that wash your clothes in grape juice? You don't do that, do you? So what's the point of these verses? What do they mean?
Donkey. Okay. When he rode in the colt, he was the choice vine. We're the vine. I'm the vine, you're the branches. I mean, you know, you make some analogy there. He washed his garments in wine whenever he hung on the cross.
Okay. Very well. Could be a picture of the Messiah. It also could simply be hyperbole. This was going to be such a great, wealthy, prosperous people that they could do ridiculous things like this and it not hurt them. Think about where they are. In Egypt, famine time. People are trading their animals, trading their land, trading themselves for food. And here, this people can waste it all. They can waste their animals. They can waste their food. They can waste their drink. They can waste their clothes. And it won't have any, they won't even notice it. That's how wealthy, that's how prosperous these people are going to be. And really it is. That's how blessed we are. Even when we don't want to admit it. But this is the first one sort of resembles a blessing. He gets to son number 4 before we really see anything positive given to his sons. Linda? You raise, no, I'm just stretching. Verse 13, Zebulun. Zebulun shall dwell at the shore of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships. And his border shall be at Sidon. We don't know a whole lot about Zebulun. You know, there are 12 sons of Jacob, and we know quite a bit about some of them. We know a whole lot about one of them. There are 12 apostles of Jesus Christ. Some of them we don't know much at all about. We know a whole lot about at least one of them. But what do we learn about Zebulun? Zebulun was going to be close to the sea. And he could make it easy for transport, for trade with other people. First Chronicles chapter 12. Verse 33. Of Zebulun, 50,000 seasoned troops equipped for battle with all the weapons of war to help David with singleness of purpose. So there you've got Deborah and Barak praising those 50,000 troops from Zebulun. And so they were warriors, but not just any warriors. They were good ones. They were good warriors. They were fighting men. That's right. They were loyal to the king. Issachar, verses 14 and 15. Issachar is a strong donkey. How many of you want that compliment? A strong donkey crouching between the sheepfolds. He saw a resting place was good and the land was pleasant, so he bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant at forced labor. What do we think about when we think about donkeys? Hard-headed, stubborn. There's not a whole lot of positive that we say about donkeys. But think back. Think back to these days. And even first century. Kings rode on donkeys. They weren't viewed as a lowly beast back then. They were viewed as a still sort of a beast of burden, but it was people of honor rode on donkeys. So being called a donkey is not necessarily a negative thing in this case. He wasn't afraid to carry burdens. The tribe of Issachar produced no great heroes. We can't go to the scriptures and say, this great hero of faith, this great hero of the Old Testament, this great warrior came from the line of Issachar. But you know what those people were? Everyday, hardworking people. They didn't have to make a name for themselves. They didn't have to have glory. They just kept their head down and kept plugging away. And that is an honorable thing to do. To work without desiring or receiving any honor. And to continue to work is an honorable thing. And that's what we see with Issachar. Those are the six sons of Leah. Three of them lost great blessings that could have been in store for them because of their sins. And they remind us, or they ought to remind us, of the importance of purity, the importance of self-control, the importance of obedience. Those are things that are essential for godly character. These three men missed out on the blessings of God because they weren't godly men. Is there any truth to that today? We miss out on the blessings of God if we're not godly people. And I'm not even talking about heaven. I'm talking about today. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 3 tells us where all spiritual blessings are. They are in Christ Jesus. If we don't want to live a godly life, we cannot expect to receive God's blessings in this life or the next. Zebulun and Issachar, they were everyday people. Their tribes served others. They weren't especially known for anything great that they did, though. And we need people like that. Really, that's sort of where I hope I fit in. As just someone to just plug away. Just be an everyday worker for the Lord. That's what we all ought to want to strive to be. But then Judah. When Reuben was the one who should have been preeminent among the brothers, it was Judah who was the one. The royal tribe conquered enemies, produced kings, none greater than the King of Kings, Jesus Christ. Any comments on the sons of Leah before we continue? All right. The sons of Bilhah. And we get a little bit out of order when we get into the handmaids, but we'll stick with the sons of Bilhah and then move on to the sons of Zilpah. Who was Bilhah? Rachel's. Rachel's handmaid. Remember, Rachel wasn't able to bear children. And Leah was still bearing children. And so she didn't have to give Jacob another wife yet. So Bilhah is Rachel's handmaid. And her first son was Dan. Verses 16 through 18. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider falls backwards. I wait for your salvation, O Lord. Well, just when we thought things were turning for the good, we have Jacob refer to this son as a serpent in the way, a viper by the path. Is that a compliment? No, it doesn't sound like a compliment. Do we know any famous descendants from the tribe of Dan? I hear it. Samson. Samson is from the tribe of Dan. And Samson was a good, faithful man all his life. No, Samson liked to look out for Samson. What's that? But the tribe of Dan, they weren't able to drive out the Philistines. And we remember that that was a constant conflict, even in the days of the judges, with when Samson was there. Who was the struggle with? The Philistines. But they weren't above going in and overtaking defenseless people. When they saw they couldn't overtake someone who was fortified, someone who could fight back, well, they just took on these weak cities and overtook them. One of the things that stands out to me most about Dan, we remember when the kingdom divided and Jeroboam wanted to make worship a little bit more convenient for his people. Because even with the divided kingdom, they were supposed to go where to worship? Jerusalem. Well, that was far. So what did Jeroboam do? He set up a couple of places for people to worship. One of those places was in Dan. And so he contributed to the sin of an entire nation. And that sin culminated in Dan. Dan's left out in the genealogies in 1 Chronicles chapters 2 through 10. He's left out in the tribal listing in Revelation chapter 7. Maybe that's because of that idolatry. We don't know. But we hear Jacob talking to Dan. In verse 18, I feel like it's breaking his heart to give this report. I wait for your salvation, O Lord.
What the sense I'm getting from Jacob is that he, in the back of his mind, he wants something better for his sons, but he's speaking the truth through. He's a conduit for the voice of God.
That's right.
Even though He feels pain himself, but he's doing this for the sake of his, of the tribes.
That's right. And Jacob has to say this. That's right. And it's breaking his heart to have to say these things about his children. Salvation. The word that is translated salvation there is Yeshua, which gives us the name Joshua, which is translated Jehovah is salvation. And then you fast forward several hundred years, and it sounds more like Jesus. Joshua sounds more like Jesus in the Greek. Naphtali. Skip down to verse 21. Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears beautiful fawns. Now, for some reason, Jacob skips the sons of Zilpah, and or he goes ahead and talks to Gad and Asher, and then he backs up to Naphtali. We don't know why, but we'll talk about it next week. We'll pick up in verse 21, but then we'll jump back to verse 19. So 19 through 33 in chapter 49, and go ahead and freshen up on chapter 50 just in case we may get there. Thank you for your comments and attention.